This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. We're discussing Ohio Medicaid expansion with Democratic State Senator Eric Kearney, who favors the idea, and Republican State Senator Bill Seitz, who's opposed. Again, you can join our conversation. The phone number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. I wanted to quote something. This was from an article in the Enquirer. Basically, it was an editorial about expansion. And this quote came from Greg Moody, who is the director of the Ohio Office of Health and Transformation. And his quote, "Technically, the federal law says Ohio is mandated to cover this group of people. If on January 1st there is an individual who would have been covered by the expansion and the expansion does not occur, there is some question about whether through the courts there could be a class that says, hey, we're reading the federal law and it says Ohio has to cover us and Ohio has chosen not to cover us. We are going to insist that you cover us." So is there a court case here if this doesn't go through?
I think there are a lot of good lawyers who would pursue that. And would try to provide coverage for the 275,000 Ohioans that are estimated to benefit from Medicaid expansion, and I think 69,000 of those are veterans. So I think people would try and seek a legal remedy.
So I think certainly there are creative lawyers that would try that trick, but let's play this out. If you think this is controversial now, you just wait until some federal court gets involved ordering Ohio to provide coverage for 275,000 people without the money. If Mr. Moody believes that the federal law requires Ohio to provide this coverage without getting the money, I think he's mistaken, but I think there would be public outrage bordering on insurrection if any court were to step in and say, you are now ordered, the federal government has ordered you, state of Ohio, to spend your own money to cover this population that we congressmen think you ought to cover. I think you're really talking about a brouhaha at that point that would make this dispute look like child's play.
What happens on January 1st, 2014, if this Medicaid is not expanded in the state and the Affordable Care Act kicks in? Does anything change? The sun won't come up.
No, I think Eric and I –
A bit of drama there.
Right.
No, I think
– hyperbole. Right?
No,
lawyers run to the courthouse.
Sure. I think Eric and I covered this earlier, Jay. If we don't expand by January 1, that simply means we will not get the enhanced federal money on January 1. When and if we expand, we will get the expanded federal match money from that day forward. So it really is, once again – all about the money. No one who has coverage now will lose it on January 1, and no one who doesn't have coverage now will get it on January 1. It's sort of a non-event, except insofar as the money is concerned.
This is Cincinnati Edition. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, people won't have health care that potentially should have health care.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, 513-419-7100. And James is calling from Centerville. James, go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you. My comment for the gentleman who is opposed to the reform or the expansion, whatever you want to, however you want to refer to it, what would happen to those 275,000 who, but for the expansion or the reform, are not going to be covered, and they have a health issue and need coverage or need health care or some type of medical assistance, and they seek out for it. They're not going to be turned down, naturally. Who ends up paying for that?
You're quite correct. Under current law, people who do not have health coverage are entitled to get emergency coverage through the emergency rooms, and that is one of the arguments in favor of the Medicaid expansion.
Who pays for it?
Well, a combination of federal subsidies to hospitals to treat the uninsured, state subsidies to hospitals for that purpose, charitable money that the hospital is obligated to spend as part of its 501c3 charitable status, and ultimately, of course, the taxpayers to the extent they're footing the bill for hospital operations. So those would be the sources of the money that would treat the currently uninsured who encounter medical emergencies and need to go to the hospital emergency room.
James, we appreciate your call. Did Senator Kearney, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think Bill did a good job of describing the sources of it. I mean, it would be an unfortunate event. You know, another thing that people don't talk about with the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion is the issue about emergency rooms and how they'll operate much more efficiently. And in theory, our insurance premiums will go down because these emergency rooms are a big cost center for a lot of hospitals, and it'll go down because people will have in theory or in hope, will have a medical home, and then that will improve the system.
Yeah. The theory is that fewer people will use the emergency room for non-emergency services.
Right.
We'll see. That's the theory, and it makes sense, but we'll see if it plays out.
Eric, a lot of people talk about the economic benefits of this. What are they? I mean, if we do go forward with this, does it create jobs? Does it?
Well, yes, it would create jobs. It would create jobs in the medical healthcare field, also in the insurance industry. So those two sectors would benefit. Also, counties would see an improvement because they would get tax revenue off of these dollars. Also, the mental health community we'd see a savings there because those people would then be covered. So there's an economic ripple that would go throughout the economy in terms of creating jobs, creating revenue for our counties, which, quite frankly, are really suffering, and our local municipalities are really suffering under the current budget. So this would help their budgets, their bottom line. And also it would help the average taxpayer because they would not see an increase in certain taxes and certain payments. So those are just some of the great benefits from it, economically.
I don't disagree with Eric that there are those benefits on the economic side of the ledger. I do think that we need to be, in fairness, cognizant of the fact that because employers are required to cover their full-time employees or pay the Obamacare tax, on the other side of the ledger, lots and lots of employers are saying, I'm not going to do that, and I'm going to reduce the hours of my employees down to part-time status, which basically puts more of them into the Medicaid bucket and reduces employment. So I think what we need to do when we're touting the benefits of expansion, we need to also recognize that other features of the Affordable Care Act are having the consequence of reducing hours and reducing employment.
But, Bill, aren't many employers already doing that?
They're doing that in response to the passage of the Affordable Care Act,
even though it hasn't gone into effect yet.
They know it's coming in on January 1, and they're planning accordingly.
And that applies to companies with 50 or more employees.
That's correct. That's right. So all I'm saying is, just let's be fair about this. There are certainly economic benefits to the expansion. Eric's done a nice job of encapsulating them. I'm simply pointing out the other side of the equation. It's not a 100% – it's not that easy. If in fact, you have reduced employment as a result of more people going on part-time status, that's not a good thing. So I don't think we really know what the net-net is until after several years of experience, because projections have a funny way in government circles of turning out to be wrong.
513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100. And Mark is calling from Dayton. Mark, go ahead. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yes. Hi. Very quickly, I just don't understand the gentleman who's against the expansion. The government could just print more money, always has in the past. It'll create inflation, but so what? That creates expansion of the economy, from what I understand. Am I incorrect?
Well, eventually, when the government prints ubiquitous supplies of money with nothing to back it up, you have the risk of hyperinflation, a devaluation of the currency. And if you want a little textbook example of what that leads to, look up the history of Weimar Germany in the years immediately preceding Adolf Hitler's accession to power.
Mark, we appreciate your call. Again, 513-419-7100. Was I about to cut you off?
Well, I don't know if there was sarcasm in the caller's question or not. I kind of perceived that there was. My view is that we should look at the benefits and the cost of the program, and I think that the benefits far outweigh it. So when you talk about people being able to keep their jobs because they're not losing their jobs because of a health issue, when you talk about like family stability and things like that, you talk about 275,000 Ohioans and then the jobs that come out of it. All of those things, at least in my mind and in my view of the world, favor Medicaid expansion. And quite frankly, I think in 5 years we will all look back on this and say what was the big controversy about.
But is there not some truth in what Bill was saying about
any
employers?
Truth in what Bill says? No,
occasionally. But I mean, when he talks about employers and how they're going to react to Obamacare,
there are some employers who have done what Bill has said. That is true,
and more will.
That could very well happen, yes. But I think that there's always a transition point. You know, people go from, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling, to, okay, this isn't exactly as bad as I thought. And then people say, oh, okay, now I see how it works. Okay, let's go forward. And let's be mindful of this. If this program works the way that the Obama administration has planned it, and if our economy continues to expand – I think employers will say, hey, listen, let me get people back to work full time. Let's get this moving forward. And I think that if our economy is doing well, that this will not be an issue.
513-419-7155. Or I'm sorry, 419-7100. 419-7100. Slipped into pledge drive mode. Ralph is calling from Cincinnati. Ralph, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I appreciate the program. I have a question or a comment and like to hear everybody's thoughts on it. So we've got a part-time person that is not eligible for the company plan, but is excited to enroll on the exchange and has pre-existing conditions. So this will be one of the first times that they're able to get an insurance policy. However, even though they are making some money, they're not making more than 100%. So in the exchange, my understanding is that if you don't make enough money, you're not allowed to buy an exchange policy, because the exchange was built on the idea that if this person is making some money, he's working part-time, maybe going to school plus working part-time, he would be eligible for the Medicaid expansion. So if we take the Medicaid expansion off the table, don't you at least have to then say in the states that they're not going to expand the Medicaid, why wouldn't we at least reduce the income requirement to join the exchange? You shouldn't have both. Either he should be allowed to get into the exchange and not have to pay more than 9.5% of his income, or we should expand Medicaid. But how do we just leave the guy in the middle while everybody else has an answer?
That's a very excellent question.
That's a great question.
And an excellent observation. The answer to your question, however, lies with Congress, because it was Congress who decided the income limitations for participation in the exchange. Remember what I said earlier. Congress also thought they had effectively mandated that all states had to expand Medicaid. And Congress said all 50 states must expand Medicaid, or else they will lose all of their pre-existing Medicaid funding. A funny thing happened on the way to the forum, though, because the Supreme Court invalidated that requirement. And so now it is truly incumbent on Congress to go back and revisit this, which is the reason why the Republican members of the United States Congress are calling on the Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare with something that makes sense in light of the Supreme Court's opinion and in light of questions such as your very excellent question about artificial limits on who may participate in the exchange now that Medicaid expansion is not a mandate.
Senator Kearney.
Well, I Bill answered the question, and I think that was an excellent question, the best one I've heard about Medicaid.
Ralph, we appreciate that question. we're getting near the end here. We've heard Senator Seitz say, you know, he wants this legal commitment, almost a contract, put it in writing. You say they'll probably put it in writing after we commit.
How do we get around?
Yeah,
this,
how do you get a how do you get a resolution so that if you're going to do this, this can take effect on January the 1st?
Well, I think that the legislature can easily take care of that, and that's by voting it out. I mean, that's really it. I mean, if the Senate were to vote the Medicaid expansion, take one of these bills and vote for it, then the issue is solved.
The way I would draft that legislation is to say Ohio's acceptance of Medicaid expansion will be effective at such time and only at such time as the federal government has delivered a binding legal commitment substantially in the form attached hereto that ensures that we can get out of this deal if they renege without any penalty to our pre-existing Medicaid funds. Okay. It could be drafted just that way and it would solve the problem.
Okay. Now, Bill is the only senator who is saying this, and Ohio would be the only state that would have this one unique requirement.
One of the great benefits of being one of the last states to decide whether to get in or get out is we can drive a harder bargain.
Yeah. Okay, we'd be the only one.
But do you think that would move some of his colleagues?
No, not a bit.
Why not?
I don't think they would move. I take you at your word, Bill. I believe you. I've heard you say it in public a number of different times, so I do believe you. I do not believe even for one second that some of your colleagues would be changed one iota by a letter or an agreement of that nature.
And is there some truth that – I mean that goes back to what Karen said when she started out her piece. There are some members of the Ohio House Republicans who said they would rather shoot themselves than to vote for Medicaid expansion.
Well, some of those legislators are going to have a big play to crow, but I think that there are a lot of them that believe.
The key here, Eric, is not to convince all of my Republican colleagues, but to convince enough of them to do this under some circumstances.
What I would say to you,
we don't need to convince the 20 in a 100-member body.
Bill, look at it this way. There are 33 members in the Senate.
That's
if
right.
We were tomorrow to have a vote on Medicaid expansion, do you think it would pass?
It would depend on whether it included the kinds of things that I just mentioned.
No, if it didn't have the letter, do you think it passed?
No, I wouldn't vote for it if it didn't have the letter.
Yeah, but you wouldn't vote for it. But do you think that we could get 17 votes?
No.
And that's where we're going to have to leave it. And we'll be following it and see what happens before January the 1st of 2014.
Thank you.
We've been discussing a proposal to expand Ohio's Medicaid program and the arguments for and against it. Our guests were Democratic State Senator Eric Kearney, who supports the idea, and Republican State Senator Bill Seitz, who's opposed. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available online at WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Rick Andrus. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.